And that was Tony Lynn Washington. That was from Blues Diva Live. That was Down in the Basement. And then we heard the Tony Lynn Washington Band doing Blues After Hours, which was the opener and closer of May's show. So I figured we would throw that in.
Yeah, that was kind of nice to hear.
Yeah.
Just like the old days, huh?
I remember I was at a show one time on GBH, and actually Tony Lynn Washington was the guest.
Uh-huh.
And they did live Blues After Hours for the intro. And I remember being in the audience. I was working with May, or even when I wasn't working, if May had somebody in, I would try to come in and be in the studio audience. Because she never longed for audiences. The people would clamor.
Yeah, right. You could hear like 20 people or 30 people in there clapping. It always sounded good, too.
Yeah, we're not talking a concert hall. We're talking a room.
Right.
With a band set up.
And the engineers were high up. They used to be high up behind the glass, old-fashioned, like Sun Studios or something.
Yeah.
Those engineers were very good, too. Everything sounded good in there, and it sounded always good
outside,
too.
And then May would be set up in the corner with her headphones and her microphone going. And
yeah.
It was fun. The good old days.
Yeah, those were good times.
The only thing I didn't like was when we had to go in, and I tried to always miss that when they did the fundraising. I'm not very big on that. I realize how important
that was
it is.
Yeah, it was a necessity. She actually did pretty well because, it wasn't really what came natural to her to try to raise money for something, but she did feel like part of the team. And, it's always a struggle to try to just, when you have your vision of how things should be, and sometimes the management doesn't always agree. And I don't recall all the, there weren't many disagreements and stuff, but she did well enough on fundraising with your help. I'm sure you answered the phones and stuff.
Yes.
So that... that they really couldn't say, well, you're not raising enough money, so now you're going to have to, like, play something different. It's not that she could ever play stuff that's not blues. But
exactly.
She did sort of keep up the corporate part of it. And I remember her going in saying, oh, it's fundraising tonight. We're going to... So that meant she had to talk a lot about the show. There was, and usually with a partner or somebody from GBH would be there with her. I forget who, but...
See, but they took us volunteers and they put us in a room with people we didn't know, way on the other side, just a bunch of phones.
If you came to me, I'd put you in a separate room.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
you remember the old studio there, too? It was different. It was a little more laid back before they... there was a couch in there or something. A lot of people came in to sleep, I think.
It was strange because, now I could say this now, but there was a lot of people that filled in that were very much more relaxed, had a much more relaxed atmosphere in the studio.
Uh-huh.
And it was just amazing. It was amazing because May ran a tight ship.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
And yes, and she, I would sometimes try to slip, a request by and say it was phoned in. Geez, I'd like to hear this song, so I'll write it down. Because we used to write everything down on a piece of paper and give it to her. And then she would oversee what would be played and not, And you knew pretty much what she was going
to
do.
You have to go look for the records in the other room?
Yes, which was like, she was very, not very open with keeping the library open and everything, which was funny because then we'd have Holly come in and fill in, or Lindsay Allison, or
I remember Holly doing the show.
Yeah, and Lindsay Allison and
towards the end there was that other guy. But
I'm so bad. I'm sorry.
He played hockey.
Remember
that guy.
But they were laid back, and like when Holly came in, Holly'd be like, "Okay, first thing we got to do is open the library, and now go in there and pick some CDs, and you want to put a set together." And I was like, wow, can I really do that?
In those early days, May would have her dog with her too. I don't know if you were there in those early days with Korea.
Oh, no.
Her German Shepherd. So a lot of people come in and say, hi, man. Oh, I didn't see that dog right there.
That was the other dog you had.
We had another dog, Chester. He didn't like anybody.
Chester didn't care for anybody.
No, he didn't like anybody.
I was going to say, she didn't bring him in there.
He killed a few people. Bit a few people. We're lucky not to have gotten sued.
Yeah,
she liked German Shepherds for some reason. She had a great male shepherd a long time ago named Leto who had Korea, who was a meek, mild thing and stayed with her in the studio. Can you imagine that? I don't think they allow dogs in the studios anymore.
And that's amazing for a four-hour stint. Oh, well, I'm sure she had the volunteer walk it.
I don't know how she got around.
I used to go out at midnight and get the Sunday paper for her. She'd always leave with the Sunday paper. She'd go, Peter, could you run down? And I'd go, yeah. And by that point, I'd run out of a drink or whatever. I want, munchies or something,
Would you walk? I used to walk on that tunnel. It wasn't a tunnel, a bridge.
Yeah.
Bridge over Western
Avenue.
Yeah. That's all moved to a different place.
Yeah. I used to get in my car and go over to the local
was it a 7-Eleven?
7-Eleven
at the end there? Yeah, it's still there, I think.
Yeah, I always had to cruise over there and get the Sunday paper.
Big giant Slurpee, you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
In those days, the Globe was great, too. I mean, the Globe's still a great paper. But in those days, the sports section couldn't be beat, you know.
Yeah. And
it was so quick. They'd have all the day's scores and Sunday for the next day. They still do, of course. But
These are all little things I remember. That was just funny.
I do remember when her show started, it was all night long. It was one night a week, one week and night, not Friday and Saturday. I believe it was Fridays. It was called the Blues Hour, even though it went from, I think, 9 p.m. all night until about 6 a.m. So the sun would be coming up.
Yeah, I remember.
And she played gospel in the last hour or two.
And
in those days, you could call her, and she had time. She just put on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Didn't get quite as, intense as far as the scheduling and her, once it got shorter. And it actually ended at 2 for a while.
Yes.
And it got shortened back to 1. She wasn't happy about that because she thought a lot of musicians wanted to hear her show. And she was, I think it was true. And so if her show ended at 1 and musicians were ending their show at 1, she was worried that they wouldn't hear her show. So, but you know what? As it turned out, as we all got a little older, it was harder to stay up later.
Yeah, exactly.
So 1 turned out to be fine, as it turned out.
Exactly, because now we're listening to the 9 o'clock end of the show.
Really? Yeah, 9 is the new end.
And then I remember Jack Walker came in, and I never realized how he could
Jack
do 2
Walker.
To 6.
Yeah, the jazz something, the jazz gallery or something.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, he'd come on with a swing. That was a tough shift. You know, they talk about these air traffic controllers having trouble sleeping at night.
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing for these DJs. It's just them and their music.
And he was so pumped up. It's like, I suppose he's probably caffeinated to the max going in there. But
even May, I could tell in her voice when she'd get a little tired towards the end, if I'd be listening from home or something. And that's a powerful station, too.
Huge.
I think it was 100,000 watts, if I'm not mistaken. If I remember right, it reached about two and a half hours in all direction, like if you were driving. So down to Providence and maybe a little beyond, and then out west, I think it went all the way past Worcester and maybe out to Greenfield. I'm not sure how far out. But it was a powerful station. And, you know, people remember her show. They didn't always know what she looked like, but they knew what she sounded like. But somebody was telling me that they were coming home from a gig, and even though her show was on, even though they got home, they didn't want to get out of their car yet. You know, they would stay in their car to let the show finish up for about 10 minutes or so.
And listen
until it was done. Then they would go in. I thought that was a real... I think I have a letter from someone, and I think I read it at one of the shows, but maybe I'll do something like that. The fan letter she got, I'm not saying she got thousands and thousands, but she'd get occasional ones saying, your show really means... And I think this is true for all shows. I think you have people that you may not even hear from, but who really do depend on you in a certain way. I'm sure you do know of people, too. But there are people, I think every show, regardless whether it's blues or country western or rock or something, the radio still has that a different kind of relationship than a lot of things that we have. Not like TV shows don't kind of cultivate that same kind of relationship.
No.
And she... you know, got a good hold on some people, and you know,
and she'd pick you up. It would be listen to May. You know, everybody says, "Oh, the blues." It makes me the opposite. It doesn't.
That's a good point.
It doesn't relax me. It makes me.
When someone says blues is a sad music, you know they don't really know blues too well.
Yeah,
and it's not their fault that they don't know it.
No.
But the people who know blues best know that it's actually you do feel good.
It's with a feeling, yeah.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, the words may be about common things that happen to
my
people.
My woman left me.
Loneliness,
I'm drinking too much.
Yeah, she left me. Yeah. I don't. You know, I'm looking at the pillow where the pillow used to lay or whatever, things like that. Let's not get into the pillow thing too much.
She ran off with the laundromat, ran off
with the milkman.
Yeah, or something,
Sun looks like the milkman or whatever.
Oh, yeah, you're not kidding.
But, I mean, in those days, you know, blues, I think, this is my own little theory, too. It goes back to the 30s and 40s, but blues was written really, and you know, for people who shared those experiences. And now that, you know, we don't quite live on the farm anymore.
No.
Or, But those human relationships things still happen. Loneliness, well, you know, or someone leaving, or friendship, good things and bad things.
That's where it
things,
all started.
How music picks you up and all the stuff. Lightning Hopkins, you know, my baby left me.
It all started as a call and response in the fields, the cotton fields and everything. The slaves would, actually, that was the very beginning of blues, wasn't it?
Well, you know, it's funny because I did one interview once on to promote the show a couple of years ago on WBZ, you know, and I was, and the guy says, "Let me ask you something. We only have 20 seconds left, but how did blues get from Africa to America?" And I thought, 20 seconds? I don't even know the answer. So yeah. I said, "It came by boat, you know," and then like, then up the coast, yeah, you know, from the deep south. I mean, for, it was a funny question because I don't. I mean, you can read about the sociological stuff, but actually there's new books out that talk about it, the truth of the matter. You know, we always were led to believe that the blacks from the rural part of the cotton fields in the deep south brought blues up. Well, it turns out there was blues being played in the cities when these people got there. It's more complex. And there's a new book, I don't know, my brother was telling me about it, I do want to read it. But much more complex relationships going on. And different kinds of blues. You know, there were some people said, "I like Louis Jordan, but I'm not going to listen to Lightning Hopkins." Or somebody said, "No, Lightning Hopkins is the real thing. You know, Cab Calloway's not real," or something. There were people who felt different kinds of blues. And even Tampa Red, you know. Tampa Red, I mean, those early guys playing mostly acoustic when Muddy Waters and those young, you know, brash musicians came in there and pumped up the volume on those early small Gibson amps. That was a whole louder thing. People say, "Well, this isn't real blues. This is like, you know, like loud music," but it wasn't probably that loud. But it had to be loud to be heard above the, you know, crowd. And so blues just changed over time.
Yeah, and a lot of blues clubs weren't necessarily where you'd go in and sit down and listen to the music.
Right, good point.
And there'd be a lot going on. It'd be, you know,
dancing,
shooting crap, and dancing, and right. You know, and
shooting craps, really. Do you know where?
No, you know what I mean. But it gives you, you know, there was so much going
blues
on.
Blues wasn't really made. Yeah, a lot of blues bands really don't. I mean, people are dancing. To me, that's kind of the best connection band can make. But sometimes you've got to go. I mean, look, when there's a concert atmosphere, then you go see a concert. Like I saw Taj Mahal with Bonnie Raitt a year or two ago. It was great, but you're sitting there watching. I'd rather be dancing, you know?
Yeah, especially with that music, yes. There's certain music where you just need to move around, and you're not allowed to do that.
He's great still, too.
I just saw him.
She is still great, too.
Yeah, I just saw Taj at the, with Paul, Dr. P., who was just dropped by some Easter oysters.
Yeah, I see. And,
with an egg carton here.
Version of Easter eggs.
I went with Dr. P., and we went to the Wilbur Theater and saw Taj Mahal at front row. It was really good.
Taj Mahal has been great.
And his daughter's band opened up. She's a local girl, goes to college here, and she was very entertaining herself. And then she came out and they did "Loving in My Baby's Arms" or whatever, you know, his song there with his daughter singing. It was really touching.
He's a great singer, too.
Taj,
you know,
excellent.
There's only one Taj Mahal.
And
I
local.
Loved him. Yeah, right, from Springfield.
Springfield.
Yeah, right.
And he's got his own line of clothes. I remember seeing him at Jazz Fest in New Orleans, and he'd say, "Now you go over and see my old lady. She's over there in booth number 72, and she got T-shirts. She got shirts just like this. They have the puka shell buttons and his batik shirts.
Oh, really?
Like he wears. Uh-huh. Yeah, his woman made them. And now he's got his own line of clothing and everything.
He was the first guy I ever saw play a National Steel-bodied guitar. And then I thought, but then I went on to see listen to Booker White, people like that.
Oh, yeah.
Who are banging, and Sun House, people banging around on him. But my first introduction was hearing Taj Mahal. And he was a young guy at that time. Now he's sort of an elder statesman. And it's funny about Bonnie Raitt, too. I got a chance at a meet and greet to talk to her for a few minutes. So real quickly, I said, "Would you come to my show?" And she said, well, you know, she's done tours all over the world, and she's in demand. And she does a lot of political things. And she's terrific. So I got online, though, and I thought, how could I get her to come to this thing, even though she's this theater that is about 400 seats or so, 500 seats, the Regent Theater, much too small for Bonnie Raitt. But what if she really were to come to this thing? So I got online and I said, it says, if you want her for a fundraiser, you know, click here. And I got onto the page and then it says, but if you needed to find this information, obviously you don't have what it takes to really book her. Because it's a much higher level of this kind of stuff goes on. I thought, wow, it's kind of bad. So they can't handle every request, obviously. She does an awful lot for various political causes and charities and the environment.
It's amazing. She did great work. She's part of the reason why John Lee Hooker started to get his money and Charles Brown came back out of obscurity and everything.
She was huge for getting those royalties and the license fees and stuff.
I can't remember what there's a name of an organization that she started, and she was responsible for those people getting money to them. Yeah. And
they were ripped off, basically.
Oh, they were huge. Yeah. And especially, you know, you have the English people, the Stones, and all these other people.
Yeah, a lot of them did well.
Were all Willie Dixon tunes, and these guys were in soup kitchens.
You know, it's not funny at all to talk about that. The exploitation, there's nothing humorous about it. But when I produced my own record and I would just kid around and someone would say, how much will you pay me to play guitar? And I'd say, well, I got a bottle of whiskey here. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, which is really what happened in the old days. And I said, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm going to give you real cash. You know.
But in the old days, they give them a bottle of whiskey. They let them drink it. And then they record them for 4 days and put out 16 albums of music.
Right.
And then these guys couldn't even use their own names.
Right.
Half the time.
Yeah, that's true. For some reason, it comes to my mind, Friendly Chap, which is Buddy Guy on one of those records.
Yeah, they could, because they had nothing. Everything was taken from them.
Yeah, they were really exploited. Not good.
Which is crazy. But Bonnie Raitt, she's a great, great musician, very nice person, but she's not very approachable.
Well, I mean, it's hard.
And out in the crowd. I noticed that
lucky to get a meet and greet. And I had 5 minutes. They had a timer there.
Yeah.
I had 5 minutes, and she was extremely nice. We took a picture with her, I believe. She was up in New Hampshire for Jean Shaheen. She was campaigning for her.
Wow.
At the Concord, New Hampshire.
Because I saw her at a show down in New Orleans, and she was hanging around the crowd and walking through the audience, and people were approaching her, and she was not. I mean, granted, that's part of your... I figure that's part of your whole job. You could at least say, please, you know.
Some people can do it.
But you don't have to be nasty about it.
You know who choked me from behind once? And I wasn't the only one, but it was at the Newport Blues Festival, at the Jazz Festival, the blues portion of it. And I was just with May. She was announcing some of the acts on the show. But we were all backstage before things started. And from behind, someone took that big hands. Grabbed me by the neck, you know, and I look up, and who's that? Chuck Berry.
Oh, wow.
He didn't say a word. He was just going around. He was doing all antics, like schoolyard antics. He was, like, doing that knee thing where you come up behind and make somebody sort of crumple a little bit.
Wow.
And he was choking other people, or he would put them in a headlock. And he didn't say a word. No, hi, how are you? I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't hurt you or anything. He didn't hurt at all.
But yeah.
I was, like, thrilled, honored to be.
Oh, you should be.
You know, he choked me. And he was happy to let people pose. He'd pose with people so they could have their picture taken with him.
That's amazing.
And then he got on there and played, he was great. He played All Alone. And it was out of tune, but great. Yeah. You're not supposed to play out of tune, but he's one of the few people who can get away with it. And he did Rockin' at the Philharmonic, which is one of those great songs. Damn. It's only on one record, I think.
The only time I've seen him a couple of times years ago, and the weird thing about Chuck Berry is Chuck Berry is Chuck Berry. He hires a band usually to back him up. He doesn't have a touring band with him.
Right.
That tours with him.
That's famous for him.
And you've got to know Chuck Berry music.
Right.
Because there is no, well, we're going to meet Mr. Berry and we're going to practice these tunes.
No.
No. Chuck Berry shows up, baby, and you better know what you're doing. Sometimes
and the audience is not fair. I mean, the audience is lucky if the band happened to be a good band that knew. They should know.
That's what happened.
Any good musician should know.
No, but
it's hard to know all the arrangements. Not all of them are like Johnny B. Good.
True.
Johnny B. Good, they should know, because that's one of the great ones. And Maybelline is one of his famous.
But how is Chuck playing them now, too? It's huge. Live and on album are two different things. If you...
Yeah,
you
and how he feels a certain day.
Yeah.
And he calls for breaks, you know, and he has to cue the band. Some musicians are better at it than others. Yeah. Some don't tell, or some look at you if you make a mistake, you know, which I think is rule number one. Don't, if somebody makes a mistake on stage, don't look at them.
Keep going,
The audience may or may not know. And
exactly.
What purpose does it serve?
It just makes it worse because you're going to make another mistake because you're freaking out because Chuck Berry's looking over at you because you just screwed his song up. No.
He probably doesn't care that much because some of the great blues is a little ragged on the edges anyway. So you can get by with certain things.
True.
So, So just a reminder to people.
May
14th on a Saturday, 7:30 it starts. The tickets are reasonably priced, I think. I've tried to keep the prices down, which is not necessarily a good thing from the business side. Sure. $25.
And they're available at the Regent Theater.
Yes, you go to www.regenttheater.com. And it's theater spelled the old English way.
R-E.
Sebastian Cabot way, R-E.
Yeah.
And that's one way they can find out information.
And it's in Arlington.
Right in the, it's sort of easy to miss. It's Center. On Medford Street, a small little street right off the Mass Ave. And there's lots of parking. If you go beyond there to Pleasant Street or Mystic Street, I think it is, Route 60, big parking lot right there.
There is.
So don't worry about parking.
It's across the street. It's like a parking. Behind a school, or is it a condo now? I think that's
still a school. Yeah. St. Agnes, I think it is. Large school. So parking is really easy that night. And, well, you'll have a good time.
It'll be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm glad you're coming, too.
All right.
It's, in the past, it's
have
you been
in
New
Orleans.
I know.
Yeah, well, usually this year it's late because usually I'm there at this point in the game.
We moved it for you, Peter. No. We said, when are you coming back to New England? Let's pick Saturday.
When will you be in town?
Exactly.
And then let's hope Duke Robillard, Sugar Ray, and all the rest of these people can make it that day.
It is hard to pick a date that the people can make and stuff.
Especially a Saturday night.
Yes, because, you know... the bands want Saturday
That's
nights are very
night.
Precious now. In the old days, you know, Wednesday through Sunday was all equally good. That's not really true anymore. The bands, a lot of clubs only have people
weekends.
On Friday and Saturday.
And a lot of bands are married with children and, you know, and do weekend gigs.
Right. So it's changed. Things have changed a little. So I'm fortunate to get the people I've got on this.
That's
on
right.
The bill.
We have the Duke Robillard Band, Guy Davis, Sugar Ray and the Blue Tones with Monster Mike Welch, Dave Maxwell, Tony Lynn Washington, Shirley Lewis, and a cast of others.
Including Sonny Crownover.
Sonny Crownover.
And maybe if there's room, I can
Peter
play
Hi-Fi.
One song. We'll see.
We should
I don't
get
have
him
a band
playing.
I have been in bands that have played on the show, but this year I booked myself right out of it, basically.
I thought I saw something that said Pete Hi-Fi Ward on there, and the comedian Jimmy Smith.
Yes,
right?
Yes, Jimmy Smith, right?
Yes, I saw that, and I saw...
Maybe I put my name on there.
You
too.
Did.
Just trying to scare a few people away.
Featuring
so there's
Peter
room
Hi-Fi
in there.
Ward with the Duke Robillard Band.
Instead of... No, we'd like to get people to come, not to repel people.
Yeah. All right, well, I appreciate you coming
Thanks,
in, Peter, and
Peter.
Spending your whole Easter Sunday with us. It was nice talking to you, as it always is.
I love coming in to talk to you. I appreciate the chance to talk about and the show and to catch up with you here at the Duke Joint.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we have, I'm glad I have a new CD to play, which is great. With you on it, because like I told you, I went looking for a legendary blues band, and now I'm starting to think that it's LP.
Well, if you go looking for my stuff that I'm on, it's
your catalog?
Looking for a needle in my catalog. It's a thin catalog.
Yeah. But great.
This is Goodbye, Liza Jane, Hello, Western Swing, for you Western Swing fans out there.
Yes.
Check it out online. You can Google it.
All right.
So
thanks
thank
again. You are listening to WMWM Salem, 91.7 FM. And by the way, Silvertone Steve says hi.
Oh, great.
I have to say that because my show has a Silvertone Steve portion of the program.